As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Friends, and welcome into the award-winning Rates and Barrels podcast. You know, the award-winning from last week.
Congratulations on both your gold and silver.
Yeah, exactly. You can pat me on the back. Good job, buddy. You tried hard, and then we can have a firm shake for we did it. Yes, because in the Baseball Pods tournament, Rates and Barrels won, and it beat my show in this league. So as everyone did the Spider-Man meme for Welsh. So like, Welsh is Spider-Man meme, but I can obviously take very, very little credit for here. You guys do such a great job, and everyone will be pleased to know, I believe Derek Van Riper is returning on Wednesday. I believe
he's back on Wednesday. I'm very pleased to know this. Yes.
Yeah. You're like, I got to get Alan Welsh the host. Hell out of here.
No.
Have you been hosting the Wednesday ones too?
I've had to do the hosting on the Wednesday ones, and okay, I'm not so good at it.
So you're like super excited. You're like, thank you, DVR. Yeah, I'm excited to see DVR back too from his hiatus, much deserved hiatus, having a newborn baby. So we can all congratulate him. And I have very, very much enjoyed, you know, by the way, not only doing which, as far as I know, we're going to be doing regular Project Prospect on Tuesdays, but getting an extra episode with you and getting into these Mondays, I've very, very much enjoyed. And I hope listeners have as well. So thank you, my friend, for making it very, very easy transition and really having great conversations with me. I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. It's also been tough to do five podcasts a week. And so I think you will be doing more than one a week for us. We will need you to step in and help, because it's a lot to do a podcast every day, as you know. So
yeah, well, I've enjoyed it. And I've enjoyed, I really enjoyed all the positive comments everybody said about Rates and Barrels. And everyone that listens, you should take pride and ownership as pushing this podcast up, because Eno and DVR have created a monster, and I am just thankful to be a part of it. And today I'm excited to talk about out of prep time. We're out of all the draft time. It's over, essentially. You might have another draft or two on Tuesday or Wednesday coming up here, but we are going to get you guys set, because the moratorium is off of the main event. We could talk about the main event. Eno and I'm going to tell when we get there, we're going to talk about how Eno did and what the team looked like and everything like that. But there was a player that Eno and I were talking about this whole time, and I'm going to see if you ended up getting him, but the moratorium on the big main events there. So we're going to be talking about that. There is some latest news and everything like that. But I want to remind you guys, you can check out everything that Rates and Barrels and everyone else has to offer if you sign up today over at theathletic.com/Rates and Barrels. Sign up, get a membership. It's only a couple bucks. Sometimes I got the dollar deal going on. I think it's been $2. Go and sign up. You're going to get access to everything. Maybe you still have a draft coming up in the next couple of days. You can get the tool and the draft kit. My Dynasty is up there, and a fantastic article, which I actually want to talk about for a second. It's Eno's 10 bold predictions for the season. Very well written, well thought out article. And you guys can get the full list of 10 names if you sign up at The Athletic today. So go and do it, theathletic.com/Rates and Barrels. But what I want to ask you, Eno, I read through your article. A couple made me very happy. I'm going to just spoil one immediately, but I'm not going to say the exact, but your Lars Nootbaar prediction, just it makes me very happy for how invested I am in Lars Nootbaar. It's a great one that's on there, and maybe that's going to come up here, but I do have a question for you, and I'm also going to have an answer to this. Of the 10, that you put together. Great written stuff. Which of the 10 in your bold predictions makes you the most nervous of any of these? And I'll save mine for after, but as you were writing them, you know, some may become easier than others. I've done lots of bold prediction videos and stuff, but there's always
nervous, like it's not going to happen.
Like maybe it's it's the biggest stretch. You know, it was one that you really had to like dig deep for, or you think that has the, maybe, I think a few of them might have some really high possibilities in there, but like, which makes you the most nervous of not hitting of all of those? I could ask you which you like the best.
Oh, I think this one is not going to happen.
The one I have?
No, Corey Seager wins the AL MVP. I wanted to put in the new rules. I wanted to have something in there about the shift. If you want to know how the sausage is made with my bold predictions, a lot of it just has to do with the research that I do in the off season, the different, leaderboards you hear on this podcast, the different kind of things that we talk about. And so you've heard on this podcast that Corey Seager hit the most line drives to the poolside over 90 miles an hour in the right angles. And I wanted to put that in a piece somewhere. So I like Corey Seager. I like that he makes contact, makes powerful contact. He's the lefty. He's going to benefit from rules. But Shohei Ohtani is a beast. And he's not even really the only guy that Seager has to swim move past. I mean, there's like Vlad Guerrero Jr. could be an MVP. I mean, who are the projections?
I think you had Trout, Ohtani, Judge are like the top three.
It's not the same league, Soto, but yeah, Judge, obviously. And one of my other bold predictions was that Trout, which I stole from Ian Khan, by the way. If you're listening, Ian Khan, thank you for that Mike Trout one. I said that he would hit the most homers of his career, and in an effort to keep Ohtani in town. And Trout is projected for more wins above replacement than Corey Seager. So there's my bold predictions kind of going head to head.
Beating each other up, yeah.
Trout really hit 50 homers and not win the MVP. there's some internal inconsistency sometimes, but I'm just trying to get a couple right. I'm hoping for three. Last year, I got two right, and I was three homers short from Nate Lowe. If Nate Lowe had hit three more homers, I would have gone 3-for-10, and 3-for-10 is my normal one. But I
was about to say, bold prediction.
Right, and I got the Washington Nationals having the worst pitching staff in baseball, right?
That's a pretty easy one. Bold prediction.
That was an easy one.
That's a pretty good one. You actually have another pitching staff one that people can read in the article. It's a very good one. It's very much like baseball. If you can just hit 300, you're doing great.
Because otherwise they're not bold enough. If I'm getting 5 out of 10 right, then that's just more like projections. That's just more like, you know, what I think is going to happen this year. You know.
Also, what's interesting about bold predictions is like, I feel like with just a tiny bit of time, they can look irrelevant. Like I did a bold prediction show like about 10 days ago. And one of my bold predictions at that time was that Anthony Volpe would break camp with the Yankees and win AL Rookie of the Year. And at that time, I think it looked bolder. It was a pretty bold prediction, especially with Rookie of the Year. Right now, if you were to like listen to it, or if I had written it down, read it, it would look not as bold. It wouldn't look quite as bold. Like now that he's broken camp and his odds have moved. His odds were 7 or 8 to 1 about a week ago. They moved up to 5 to 1 on AL MVP. Or AL Rookie of the Year. It's essentially Gunnar Henderson, Masataka Yoshida, and him now are the top three in the AL side. The one that stood out to me in your article, because there's a lot of big names, there's a lot of like, you talk about like one of the best staffs, but this one just jumped out to me. And it was in your top five of Ryan McMahon is an all-star this year with the rookies. And I'm really curious if you would expand on it. In the article, you talk about, you know, just a more aggressive approach on pull heavy fly ball guys, which I think has something to do with it, of course. But, you put him pretty high in this list. And I thought this would be the one that might be a little bit more volatile. But again, it is like top five. So just maybe some quick thoughts on Ryan McMahon making your breakout article. Your bold predictions.
Yeah, it's just, when I look for breakouts on the pitching side, for example, this is a digression, but if I'm looking for breakouts on the pitching side, what I'm listening for is, oh, I've got a new pitch. I've got a new grip. I'm changing something about the way I pitch. And then, you add that to maybe some small sample strikeout rate surge, and you're like, ooh, there is something different here. Or I got a velocity reading, and oh man, he's got an extra couple ticks like Reed Detmers or something, you know? That's what I'm looking for. On the hitting side, it's a little bit less obvious because hitting is so complicated. But on the hitting side, when I hear something like what Ryan McMahon said, where he said, I want to be aggressive on when, like, I want to, he said, I want to trust my eyes. And so basically saying he's want to be more aggressive, which is another way of saying, I want to get the ball out in front, you know? And so he's saying, like, on the swings that I do take, I want to take aggressive swings and get the ball out in front. He is a let it travel guy in the past. He was 207th out of 270 or something in terms of pulling fly balls. So he doesn't pull fly balls. He lets the ball travel and he hits it all over the field. And that works to some extent in Colorado. But we know that he has pretty good raw power from his max EV. And then we know from the spring that he hit the second hardest hit ball in front of the machines. And so what I'm pairing is a change in approach with a change in results. It is the hardest hit ball he's ever hit. And so I'm pairing those two together to say Ryan McMahon is going to hit 30 homers this year. It's boldish because he's really settled in at sort of 20 to 24. He doesn't seem like a 30 homer hitter. But in terms of age, it's a good time to make a guess like this. In terms of peak age, he's right there in the middle of his peak. And there's a couple pieces of evidence around it.
I like it. You guys can go check it out. Like I said, sign up today, theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels. Or if you're already got your subscription set, then don't worry. You can check it out. Eno's bold predictions for the season is available for you on the app. You can check it out on some tweets, and I highly suggest you go through it. It's a good read if you've got any last minute drafts that are coming up. All right. Some news and notes we have got.
Well, there was one in there that actually can segue for us a little bit.
Oh, yes. We were talking about, you and I actually were talking about it's funny enough. This is a cool moment for me. I always love my Eno moments, where before we started up the show, we were listening to Joey Votto. We were listening to Joey Votto talk today. And I had told you, I was telling you just random stuff. I've got a couple of random things to add to some of the news, but Joey Votto had played a low A minor league spring training game yesterday, and he traveled, which that's a unique thing for veterans to travel, by the way. And what's so cool about that is if you ever see it in the spring, these guys just jump in their car, they drive down to the stadium in the parking lot, they jump in, they play, they get in their car and they leave. And that's essentially what he did. And I was like, hey, Votto's starting
a little bit more possible in Arizona, maybe.
yeah, exactly. Maybe not Florida. And you know, he comes and he plays, and I'm like, I thought that was interesting because he was playing on the IL, and you just happen to have this video up where Votto was asked about talking about his favorite guys in the rotation, and that was
love to see Trent Rosecrans. Actually, he tweeted out today that Votto said he was, quote, still working through some of the rehab process, not accumulating enough time in the field, not accumulating enough at bats. Yesterday was the first day where I felt semi close to being able to play close to 100%. So sounds like he's around 80%. I don't know. I'm guessing the numbers in there. close. But it may not be a long time that he's down, but I'm also a little worried about a guy coming off labrum surgery when it comes to how much power is going to come back. When I was scrolling through Trent's Twitter feed looking for that quote, I found this excellent interview there at the press conference. And in my bold predictions, I say that the Reds top three of Graham Ashcraft, Nick Lodolo, and Hunter Green are going to give them the first big three. I define that as 2.5 wins above replacement. So that's top 50. So the first top, you know, three top 50 starters, 25 and under, since 2008, when the Giants did it with Tim Lincecum, Jason Schmidt, and Jonathan Sanchez. Wow. So the trend in baseball, I think, has mostly been away from the young starter. We saw somebody like Grayson Rodriguez, who seems like he's super ready. He got sent down today. And we see them slow walk starting pitchers all the time. Brandon Pfaadt, you said, was more ready than anyone. I mean, he had all the innings and he got sent down. So we're seeing a trend away from young pitchers, but the Reds are going to pitch all these guys. The stuff likes them. And, you know, I think that they can succeed. So the interview was, Votto said something about debates they're having about which of the three is going to be the best. And Votto's hilarious because he goes on this whole 2-minute thing about how Hunter Green has this fastball and Lodolo's hard to pick up, and how he gets reactions at first base from people. And, and how Graham Ashcraft is hard for people to hit. And he's supposed to come to a conclusion where he's supposed to tell them who he thinks.
And he led up to it too. He's like, so you want me to answer which of the three is the best? And that's, and then he kind of has a big pause. And then what was his answer? You know,
and he goes, Alexis Diaz is a fine closer.
And you and I just started busting up laughing because I was in the background because I, long thing, but you know, that Votto was involved in this event with Topps earlier in the year. And there's someone I know that actually asked him the question and he had just responded like Lodolo, like he's like, hey, who do you like? And they literally asked it from a fantasy perspective. And Votto was very respectful saying, I really like both of them, but I would go with Lodolo. So while this video is going on, I'm like narrating it to Eno. I'm like, he's going to say Lodolo. He's going to say Lodolo. And I'm like, here it comes. And then he's like, Alexis Diaz is really good. And then we loved that. We loved busting.
He's so smart, though. There was a little bit in there that was really smart that I'm still trying to figure out how to research and how to get right. But he said they're operating from such a high ceiling when it comes to stuff that when they make adjustments that will kind of reduce their stuff and make them more effective, because they started with such great stuff, that adjustment's going to work. And anybody who's been listening to this knows we talk about how to account for how many pitches a pitcher has, how they work together. Now, obviously, stuff is defined off of the fastball, so there is some interconnectivity. I'm not just looking at each pitch in a vacuum, but at the same time, there's something about weak contact, something about how hitters can start to over time get used to your shapes. So if you throw more pitches, you go deeper into the game. That's a fact. And so there's something that's beneficial about just having a pitch that they don't see very often. And so that's what I think Votto is kind of talking about. It's like, oh, Ashcraft may start throwing a curve that's not as good as a slider or his cutter, but gives them a different look and gets them a few stolen strikes and gets them a few ground balls when he needs them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You just sparked something in my head that might end up being a really dumb question because you probably covered it a million times, but how many pitchers or who are the best pitchers that can manipulate shape as games go on? You know, like there is a shape to, let's just say fastball, there's fastball shape. Are there a lot of pitchers that you know of that in game can manipulate the shape? Because the thing that made me think about it was, I was actually watching this breakdown video, this pitcher that was like, I wanted to throw this, I'm forgetting who it was, but it was this pitcher who pitched against Juan Soto and he was so excited. And it's a dream come true. And he went through his whole narration of his approach. And he was like, fastball here. I don't know. This is a look me pitch. And then the strikeout pitch, he goes, I wanted to throw the slider because he hadn't seen my slider, but the catcher said fastball up and he strikes him out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking about that's obviously an approach for many pitchers, is to be able to, you know, use a pitch maybe in a second at bat that the guy had not seen. But when you get into third and fourth at bats, are there guys that can manipulate shape better than others? And who are those? Again, if this is a very stupid question that has been discussed.
No, it's pretty smart too, because the trend right now is to have have a gyro slider and a sweeper slider. And we're going to have to be pretty smart to capture all those in the tracking systems, because they might, you know, on pitch
comp, might make it into sliders. Something else. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, for example, John Gray last year was throwing a gyro slider, and like his normal gyro slider and the sweeper at the same time. And I don't know that my numbers were picking that up completely correctly. So that's an example. And so my broader answer to you is, you know, remember we used to say that the changeup was a feel pitch, and I think that's not untrue. But if we were ranking pitches based on feel pitches, I would actually say breaking balls are even more of a feel pitch, because you have guys that have three breaking balls. How many people have three changeups? You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, guys that have three breaking balls already have to have a lot of feel. They have to be able to, quote unquote, spin it. That's one of the things that we're looking for. And spin it doesn't always mean the highest spin rate. It means a feel for spin. It means an ability to manipulate the shape. And sometimes that lends itself to three distinct breaking balls, or sometimes like a Griffin Jacks or a Matt Wisler.
Yeah. Wisler.
Matt, right?
Wisler. I think, let's go with it.
Anyway, you guys know what I'm talking about. The guy who throws.
We're doing different shapes of his name. So keep going. Yeah. It's all part of the context of the talk
here. Yeah. Or even a Romo, like, you know, those guys who throw 67% sliders, I guarantee you that all of them have two sliders in there.
It's interesting. So
I would say generally the breaking ball, the guys with the best breaking balls, they have multiple shapes they're hiding in there.
Yeah. And I'm even wondering about like manipulation of shape on, you know, maybe not even like breaking pitches. And if that's like, if that's something that's very advanced right now, or everyone's very focused.
I have heard about it only from one person, and it's a persona non grata, but it's too good to not talk about. So Trevor Bauer told me that, you know, he would be facing Alex Bregman, and Alex Bregman is also a really smart hitter. And so Trevor Bauer said that he knew that Alex Bregman was training to hit the top half of the ball when Bauer threw his four seamer. So he was trying to get on top of that ride. Right. And that's been an adjustment that Marcus Semien has made. Other players have made. In order to hit the good four seamer, you kind of have to aim at the top half of the ball, and then you kind of get it flush when the ball meets as your bat. You know what I mean? It's kind of tricking your own brain. So Bauer knew that Bregman did this, and I even had the video at one point, but Bauer actually manipulated the ride on his fastball and took ride off.
See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is exactly, you're breaking down at like, I'm wondering about the players in game who can find that ability to manipulate shape. If that is like a new
video I had, I swear to God, Bregman looks out at Bauer. He like Bauer throws one, Bregman tops it foul, and he looks back at Bauer like, what the F was that fastball? You know? And then Bauer throws another one and he grounds out. And I think Bregman's like looking, and I think I even asked Bregman about it. And he's like, yeah, I was wondering what was up with that fastball. So I would say, again, it's the guys who throw a ton of them. So why Lance Lynn, he throws like six fastballs, right? And, you know, he told me he throws a BP fastball. You know, that doesn't show up. There's no, you know, pitch tracker that's saying like, oh, he throws 5% BP fastballs, you know, but Lance Lynn's probably usually better than his stuff plus numbers. And part of that is because he can manipulate the shape on all his fastballs.
Very interesting. I mean, you are literally the perfect person for that to come to my mind to ask. I couldn't think of a better person.
And that's what Max Scherzer says when he says he hates stuff plus, because he thinks that feel is much more important. And I say feel should show in location. Feel should actually show in stuff plus eventually, because you're replicating good shapes, and that's what it's about. But I have some. I'm not going to discount what he says. It's not like stuff plus is the one number that makes every pitcher make sense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there are always outliers. You're like, this guy's much better or much worse than his stuff plus.
You've mentioned like changeups. Changeups don't work well. Changeups you've had issues with on stuff plus, and if you're seeing guys manipulate shape and stuff like that in pitch, it's going to affect what the numbers look like. So any of them are imperfect systems, but you know, at the same point, it's still probably one of the best metrics that have been out there. So great answer. I'm glad that you had that. Just was kind of jumping in my mind, as I think I even asked you this in that last episode, of like how sweepers and gyros are becoming the new trend. you just wonder, and I was wondering, like, what are the next trends? And I know you
and who can like, actually command both of those pitches.
You know? When you had those answered, like, changeups and changeups going into splitters were kind of like your maybe next, you know, bastion of pitches.
Yeah, we're like, working on a piece about the rise of splitters. I mean, it, like just coming off of that Japanese, pitching, staff in the WBC, splitter after splitter, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe we'll see some more shape manipulation that's going to be going on in the future as part of it as well.
Well, that's what Gossman says about his changeup too, right? Like he has that Fosh grip, and when he really wants to drop off the table, he throws it deep in the fingers and lets it really sort of fall out. And then when he wants to kind of control a changeup, maybe for a freeze take or something, he thinks that someone's spitting on his changeup. He'll hold it a little bit differently and throw it a little bit differently and get less action on it, but be able to do that. So anybody who has an elite pitch and throws it a lot, I think has multiple shapes in there.
Ooh, do you think article idea in the future, would you ever be able to, I would be fascinated to have identified the top shape manipulators in baseball. That would be really fascinating to see. Probably not.
It's so hard to study though. Cause well, let's say you did like probably standard deviation. Yeah, what if you did standard deviation on pitch types, right? Like standard deviation on movement. You could just have a guy who has no idea how to replicate the shapes. It's not that he's trying to replicate different shapes. It's just like he can't replicate the shape on that pitch. Or like the biggest, nastiest pitches that have the most movement will always just show up as having the biggest standard deviation because sometimes it's 24 inches and sometimes it's 20 inches, and that's much more than someone who throws like a tight little gyro slider when it's like off by a half inch or something. You
know what I mean? It's something hitters have to answer. Maybe that's a hitter answer to that question where hitters
this year.
Yeah, they identify
who's good at manipulating the shapes on their pitches.
Yeah, that would be really fascinating to see. We got some news and notes, and then we got to hit some main event here. And actually one little curtail to the main event, and I were talking a lot before it, and Anthony Volpe was a lot in our conversation. This was someone that you obviously wanted. You don't have to disclose yet if you got it, but well, we got official news.
I didn't get him. And it was more just that it wasn't, I was necessarily trying to hide it. It was more just that the hype machine, I was trying to gauge where the hype machine was at. And there's always just a relationship between the hype machine and the cost and what you're willing to pay and the risk. So, you know, at that time at the main event, which I did on Friday, Volpe was kind of chugging along towards maybe making it, but I still had my reservations because I was saying like Westberg, you know, he got sent down today. You know, there was other people that seemed just as close. Grayson Rodriguez, I thought he was going to be an Oriole and he got sent down today. That doubt plus the performance doubt, because now that Volpe has made it, he could still just be meh, you know, like it's still a possibility as much as people like him. So you combine those two and it was just still too much to pay. The hype machine had gotten going. The early main event drafts in New York City with Yankees fans that were pretty sure that the Volpe is going to make it, I think, pushed that price up and just went in a place that we couldn't handle it.
Yeah, there was I think I even texted you about it like on Thursday because like it really picked up steam, I think on Wednesday of last week where it really started to go and that didn't help. But we got official word between I think Sunday and today as we're recording this that Jordan Walker, Anthony Volpe, Oscar Colas, and then as of this morning, Bryce Terang, all big prospects that were breaking camps with their teams. A couple of players, obviously, maybe to our surprise, didn't. But Walker and Volpe. Walker is pushed, I think, inside of most people's top 100, just in case you do have a draft coming left. I have thought if Volpe was given the gig, he belongs right around the top 100. And Colas, I think, is still pretty, pretty being slept on for making the opening day roster. But one note is Volpe's going to hit ninth, which also could have, you know, little tiny effects in there.
In my draft, Volpe went in the 10th round at 141. He went ahead of Gleyber Torres. He went ahead of Matt Chapman, Carlos Correa, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Jonathan India, Ryan McMahon. We took a shot on Grayson Rodriguez at 167. And so I think if Volpe had been there at 167, we might have taken him. That was the earliest that we could really see taking a shot on a veteran. the what we passed, like we went, we were at 141. Volpe went at, what did I say, 140?
Yeah,
it's right here somewhere. Come on, where are you?
Yeah, I thought you said 141. Was there anyone?
Oh, Volpe went at 141. We picked at 137. So I guess we could have taken him. We were pretty focused on getting innings at that point because we had been planning on having a two ace format, but we got a late pick in the first round. And so we took Corbin Burnes and then Juan Soto at 14 and 17. Hmm. And since we then didn't pick again for so long, we weren't comfortable with taking any of the starting pitchers that were available to us when it came back to us.
You needed to later in the draft start focusing on pitching.
Right. So we took Romano and Lindor at the next turn.
That's the tough thing that happens. We'll talk a little bit more about the main event here in just a tiny bit. That's the tough thing that happens in drafts when players kind of have their like stationary level of where they go based on what you do. Sometimes it's not that you don't want a player, but you just price yourself out based on draft necessity. And that happens plenty of times. It happened in a couple drafts I did where I wanted Corbin Carroll, but you know, I pushed and needed pitching kind of in that general vicinity. And I think that's ended up happening with Volpe. I want to get back to the main event here in just a second, but a couple other pieces with both of the big prospects breaking camp, which is awesome. And it's going to be a big payoff for people. Wander Franco had a scare this weekend, and it's a big scare for me because I drafted him all over the place because I think he's going to have a big bounce back this year. But luckily, it looks like it's all good, and he's going to be ready for opening day, which was a huge scare for me. You know, I don't know if you're a big buyback on Franco this year.
Well, I am. I think that he's the key for the Rays season. I think that he's, I mean, I think it's about health to some extent, but I'm not ready to say he's injury prone. I mean, the things that have happened to him, hit by pitch, you know, little bit of a hamstring thing. I'm not saying he's injury prone yet. And so a full healthy season will give him the chance to make the adjustments to unlock some of that power. I think we've seen the raw power and the real thing that's waiting. You know, I think he's a, maybe only like a 10 to 15 stolen base guy in terms of speed, but he could be anywhere from a 15 to 30 homer guy.
Yeah, totally. That's a good way to put it. You're 100% right. With high batting average and hitting in the middle of an order, you know, runs and RBI could definitely
like a 280, 30, 15 season is totally within his grasp. But the power, I think, is where the most oscillation is between his upside and downside.
Yeah. I mean, and he's also in the same breath. He could be a 325 homer, 10 to 15 stolen base guy, and he could be 85, 85 plus on run and RBIs. You just never know with how it goes. But I'm a big buyback on him. That was a little one of those scares. Obviously, I imagine you and Al talked about it, but you know, like Rhys Hoskins right before the season start was like a huge blow for a lot of people. And that kind of changed the landscape. We keep having the landscapes change on positions. First base is fine, but it was everybody was kind of like banking, all right, if I don't get the elite guys at the top, I can still go get one of, you know, Hoskins or Cron or Walker or Rowdy Tellez. And then those kind of have moved away. I was a little bit worried this is going to be another one of those with all my shares, but it wasn't, luckily. Kyle Wright is going to be getting the season on the IL. I'm kind of down on Kyle Wright. I wasn't big on him this year, even though I felt, mainly because I felt like there was a lot of paying for what he did last year on his
command staff. Kind of spiked.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried about it overall, but the IL is going to have dropped his cost a decent amount. But either way, he's starting on the IL for the season. One note, Keston Hira, just prospect people like me, designated for assignment and going to be seeking a trade partner, the Brewers are. Otherwise, they're going to outright release him, I believe. So
Pirates?
Keston Hira might have. They have needs for anybody, right? That seems right.
I mean, they also had they're such a young team that they could option somebody down that, even Rodolfo Castro, I think he has options. So if you wanted to option Castro down and just give Hira, you know, a month, Castro has one option left. So you could option Castro down and give Hira a month at second base and just see if you care to see more, you know.
Who was that team you were saying the other day that did that at the end of the year where they were just picking up
the Giants? The Giants did it at the beginning of Farhan's tenure where they went through Connor Joe, you know, Mike Stremski, a bunch of other players where they just kind of cycled through players.
I'd be interested if the Royals considered doing it, maybe. There's another one of those.
The Royals need pop, yeah.
That might be one of them.
you know, it was opening day and all these players were coming in with their opening day drip. And I'm never going to look like Ellie De La Cruz and be 6 foot six with that body. So I'm not going to pull off that look. But I was really jealous of all these guys with their fitted shirts. I love the way a fitted shirt looks. So I went to Inoshino.com and got my own fitted shirt. And, you know, I got a nice flannel. I wore it to the live podcast that we did in New York and got some compliments on it. You know, what's really cool is you go through this experience where you get to, you know, customize the lapels, the linings, the monograms, the pocket flaps, anything you want. If it's a suit or a shirt, you give them your measurements and you get a shirt that fits you perfectly. It's bespoke without this like big price tag. $89 for fitted shirts. Suits start at $499. Just really high quality stuff. So whether it's opening day and you're at the ballpark and you're trying to interview a ball player, or you just want to look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor, when you wear Indochino, you go to Indochino.com today and use the code RATES to get 10% off of any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code RATES.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And then the last note here is Juan Soto, who you mentioned you ended up drafting. And I was on the backfields today and I got to watch him play. And he played in a simulated minor league game. Joe Musgrove actually pitched. He pitched five innings. We can talk about that in a second. That's another one of those that are good. But Juan Soto had a bunch of at bats. He was playing the outfield. He wasn't DHing. He looked really good. And then right after it, Kevin Acey, who's a Padres reporter, was there, talked to him after. And then almost immediately after I watched him walk off with Kevin, it was reported that it looks like he's going to be good for opening day, which probably gave a discount. You clearly got the discount at, what'd you get him at, 15?
Yeah, we got him at 17.
17?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of talked about that prior last week, that he would be a guy that would drop. So, I mean, 17, that is a huge discount. If you were doing the main event today, what do you think he would go for now that he's good?
I don't think that he would jump a bunch, but I think he'd jump into the back end of the first round.
You don't think he would jump into the top 10,
13, something like that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Healthy. It's one of those things where the projections love him. The projections say he's going to have the second best year of his career. You know, people in San Diego, I think, to some extent doubt that because they felt a little bit jilted by his performance when he came over, you know? And I think that people who were watching him in the playoffs or watching him in San Diego when he kind of got a little bit more exposure, like in terms of recency bias, aren't super into him. So I'm not saying that there's a big divide on Juan Soto, but, you know, it's easy to say, oh, he won't, how many bases he going to steal and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Maybe he's not suited for the new ball and, you know, but projections love him, and maybe you're right. Maybe he'd sneak into the top 10.
I think he would, but I tell you, all of these leg issues he's had, I really question what he's going to try to steal this year. I mean, this is his third thing.
Sprint speeds are going down, and like, early
spring, and then right before the WBC, and then this again. I really question what the speed numbers are going to look like. So I think it's way fair. You had a really great point in the last episode you and I did together where it's like, Jordan Alvarez versus him. I'm not sure if Soto's not stealing. He's much different than Alvarez, and Alvarez might be safer at this point. There's
better
more
batting average.
Soto.
I'd probably give Alvarez, but Soto is also going to benefit from the shift rules more than Alvarez because Soto does hit ground balls to the pool side.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. He looked good out there, though, just to let everybody know. They said it looked like way more at bats. They didn't have a full squad. They're playing against the Mariners, and the Mariners, you know, wasn't great pitching. They had like Tommy La Stella was the best player that was playing with them. And they were every inning cycling through. So I want to say he got five or six at bats on there. The other interesting one was Joe Musgrove pitched that entire thing. And it looked like he pitched what was relevant to about five innings. And I was being a little snoop. I was being a little sneaky snoop over because the dugout's right here. And I heard him talk after he was all done. and he was sounded like he was on cloud nine. He said he felt great. And, you know, I also heard him say that he was experimenting with a different grip for a changeup. And I'm just telling you what I heard him say. I was standing 5 feet from him and I heard him say that it felt really good with this different changeup grip that I didn't hear who he said showed it to him, but he was out there using that. And I thought that was extra sneaky, and that he was out there pitching 5 innings in a minor league game probably is going to show like what a great discount, maybe one of the few injury discounts that Musgrove was coming into the season. And I kind of love the changeup thing.
Yeah, it's the toughest thing about spring when you get these spring updates on injuries and you don't know how to react, and then people overreact. But see, there's an example where people didn't overreact. Carlos Rodon, there was more pressure on him downward in the rankings than I thought, and the newest news is he's going to miss more time than they originally thought. And that's the risk where you're like, I don't want to take an injured guy who's injured right now, because then, you know, what happens when they get the update? Oh, he's not responding as well, or oh, this other thing hurts or whatever.
Yeah, good point.
So I can see why people do it. I think with Soto, our bet was just that the upside was so high. I think Musgrove, my model has always really liked, and so I would have taken the shot if it made sense in our main. But you know, with pitching also, I'm just a little bit less likely to pull the trigger on someone who's currently
take any risk on. I like that it wasn't like some arm fatigue issue or something like that with him, but he was as jacked up as I've ever seen him. Pitch great, love the results, throwing some changey grip just to be on the lookout for in season. Maybe that'll be a bigger thing. But you know, when he was going in the 60s and falls to the 90s, there's a pretty good discount. I would feel good if I was doing a draft in the next couple of days to be able to just boost him up a little bit. I did snag him in a few spots. Speaking of drafts, that takes us to the main event. Will you give us a little experience too? Because you went out to Vegas, correct?
No, I did not.
You did not.
In fact, if anybody is out there thinking about doing a main event next year, one sneaky bit of knowledge is to break in on the main events that are during the Vegas weekend, but are online. Because most of the people who go to Vegas to draft in person aren't going to do an online one while they're there. And ooh, so you can kind of
get the sharks out,
break in without as many sharks. Yes. So that helped me along to my third place finish last year. And I'm hoping I've got a listener who is my co-manager on this. We wanted to do things that we didn't end up doing, but we also did a lot of things we wanted to do.
So that's what I wanted to ask you, is what was the we're going to look at the team, have you list off some of the team, but what was before, not what you ended up doing, but what was the pre-prep conversation of like how you wanted to attack your draft? Like what goes into it for you?
Yeah, so I mean, the main thing for us was, because we have so much good ADP knowledge that we can see what other teams have done in the past, what other drafters have done in the past, we were able to look at what would happen in different lineup slots, you know, in different, what they call KDS, which is Kentucky Derby System, which is, in the beginning, you tell them where you want to draft from. And then they pick, basically they give you your slot based on luck.
It's like a draft order for picking your
draft order. Exactly. And so we basically said, okay, what would happen if we picked 1 through 3? We would have this available. We'd have this available. We'd have this available. What if we happen to draft in the middle? We'd have this available. And we kind of planned out the first maybe 5-6 rounds for the beginning, middle, and end, just in text back and forth. Oh, like if we do this, well, this will be available to us. So what we decided was we really liked the top three, actually, because what we wanted to do was get two aces. We found that there was some research by the Birchwood brothers on Fangraphs that said that main event winners spent more on pitching than other teams, and that teams that were closer to a 50-50 split on investment in pitching did better. And so we thought, you know what, if we get 350 innings of just studliness at the top of our draft, that's what we want to do. And so we really were hoping for a beginning that would go Jose Ramirez, Shane McClanahan, and Brandon Woodruff. which looked like it was possible if you looked at ADP. It didn't end up being possible. We didn't get that draft slot, but if we would have gotten that draft slot, we would have gotten Jose Ramirez, and then we would have gotten Shane McClanahan, but Brandon Woodruff would have gone and then we would have had to either pump up Kevin Gausman or take a bat. So even if it had gone the way we wanted to, we would have had to make a decision in the third round that we didn't want to.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's what happens. Every plan that you make, you know, goes to crap at some point. And so what happened for us is we got the 14th pick. And which is
was that
not
the last plan, by the way, when you were like, you want the top? Was that like at the bottom?
It was one of the worst. The very worst for us was like 8, 9, 10. Because then we saw top six bats that we wanted. And so we didn't like 8, 9, 10. It was, you'd have to kind of pump up Mookie Betts, you know, more than ADP says you should, or take Vlad Guerrero and not get any speed. So we didn't like 8, 9, 10. We did have 14, 15 ahead of like 10, 11, 12, something like that. So we did get Corbin Burns as our number one. I was really hoping for Mookie Betts, but he went two ahead of me. And so we took Corbin Burns, and then on the backside, we took Juan Soto who fell.
Pretty strong Tatis, start.
Tatis and Strider went in between. We figured he would take one pitcher, and we figured that either Soto or Manny would be there for us on the way back.
And prioritized Soto over Manny.
Yeah.
In that case.
And so we took Soto. And then on the way back, what we were hoping for was Luis Castillo to drop to us at three, where we were picking, where we would be picking at the end of three, 44. So we were hoping Luis Castillo would go to 44. Guess where he got picked? 42. And we said, well, if Castillo is gone, then maybe Wheeler makes it to us. Well, Wheeler went 43. And the next starting pitcher after Wheeler, there's a bit of a shelf there. The next starting pitcher was 57. And anyone who listens knows that Shane Bieber is not one of my favorites. So we didn't want to pump up Shane Bieber 15 points. So we went with Jordan Romano, because at that draft slot, we knew that Ryan Helsley and Ryan Pressly and a bunch of the other guys wouldn't make it back to us, which was true. None of them made it back to us. We wouldn't have had a top end reliever, not even Felix Bautista made it back to us.
Wow. So that's from the fourth to the fifth round, because the third round you took Romano. And then what was your fourth round pick?
Our fourth round, Lindor.
Lindor. Okay. So you got Lindor.
I thought Lindor was like Soto, was just like a bat who fell too long. You know, Lindor was going in the back end of the second at different times of the drafts this year. So we took Lindor in the fourth, and we thought with Lindor and Soto, like, had a good bat base. With Romano and Burns, we had a good pitching base, and we thought that most of our options were open from there on out. And
you kind of covered everything. You got your infielder, you got an outfielder, you got a relief pitcher, and you got a starting pitcher. So that's a strong core four. So where did you go in round five when none of those relievers came back?
We would have had to take Camilo Duvall, who we liked, but we think that the Giants are going to spread the love around. And so, you know, if Duvall had been our number one reliever, I think we would have been a little bit disappointed. So but since we were no longer looking at pitching when other people were looking at pitching and relievers, we did a fun MI double tap at 5 and 6 and went Tim Anderson and Andrés Giménez. And our plan had been to skimp on steals, but we both like Tim Anderson. We both like Andrés Giménez. Andrés Giménez is a 95th percentile sprint speed guy.
Love Giménez there.
You know, and Tim Anderson, we thought, would keep our batting average afloat. And we got two shortstops. We thought we might create a little scarcity in shortstops too, you know, by having Anderson and Lindor. And we just went bop, bop, bop and just finished off MI, you know?
Like, I did the exact same thing, by the way, in a league this weekend where I went Corey Seager and then I got Franco a little bit later and I paired both of those guys in a draft. And then I think my second baseman was Giménez as well, because I'm obsessed with Giménez. So I really went heavy. I did the exact same thing. I like the strategy.
Yeah, the other thing we found looking at this was that the ADP versus auction value calculator value was all out of skew for catchers. And we thought getting good catchers was a strategy, you know, that would work for us. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out in terms of who was available. Like, we really wanted Will Smith, but, you know, it wasn't available at the right times. And so at 7 and 8, we got Logan Gilbert for more innings that we thought were high floor and high ceiling innings. And then MJ Melendez, who may, along with Varsho, lead the catching position with plate appearances. And we picked MJ Melendez over Wilson Contreras and started a heck of a catcher run by picking Melendez, because Contreras went, Alejandro Kirk went, Tyler Stevenson went, Sean Murphy went, and William Contreras went, all in the 8th round.
Wow. So people panicked.
We kicked off a little mini run there.
God, that feels good. Doesn't that feel good when you do that too? Because you're like, yeah,
and you got the guy you wanted.
You're like, I got my guy. Now you guys just waste all these picks with the guy I wouldn't take, so my players come back to me again. Oh, it's such a good feeling.
Yeah.
I feel it.
I don't know if we need to go through every pick, but I do. Next pick is interesting, because another thing that I had uncovered in my research for AL labor, but also just generally, is that mid-tier first basemans were a value this year. So I think none of this stuff is really stuff I've hid from you. The catcher thing kind of showed up when we were doing research specific to the main event, but you might have noticed me talking about Josh Naylor from my AL labor draft and how much I like Rowdy Tellez. He's been all over my pieces. And so Rowdy Tellez, Josh Naylor, let me see if I have my main event prep still open, but main prep here, first base. There's a mini tier here of guys who are still worth a lot. Josh Bell is worth $13 in the main event. Rowdy Tellez, $14. Andrew Vaughn, who is talking about pulling fly balls, which would change his abilities, his upside completely, $13, just the way he's projected. Anthony Rizzo, $13. Josh Naylor, $11. Ty France, $9. So that is a super value tier, because those guys are going around 200, you know? Also, Vinny Pascantino is projected right in the middle of that, and he's the one going 93. So he was almost on a do not draft for us. So we had those guys circled, where we were like, these guys are all going around 200 ADP. Let's get our guy. So Rowdy Tellez, we got him at, we got him at 134.
God, value.
And the best part was we also got Naylor, and we got Naylor at 197. So we got our first baseman from the scrap heap, but I don't feel like they're scrap heap guys. They're both going to benefit a lot from the new rules. And so we just thought that they were good values where they were. And those are our first basemen. So,
yeah. And also, just out of the article, also got Ryan McMahon. Ryan McMahon made the roster. People can check out as well. And,
McMahon, we got 164. He was a bold predictor. Yeah. We got, and then of course you always have to leave something on the side. And so, after we took Jordan Romano, we said we're not going to invest heavily in second closers. We think those have really bad outcomes. That's something I've said on the podcast before. And so we got our lead guy, Jordan Romano, and then our second closer is Craig Kimbrell. And then we took a shot on Hunter Harvey in the reserves. So that's our steal. That's our save strategy. The other thing that we left on the wayside, because we really wanted to hit up the middle with innings. So we got Burns, Gilbert, Montgomery, Turnbull, Tyon, Civale, Grayson Rodriguez, Ryan Nelson, Kenta Maeda. So we wanted a lot of like veterans starting pitchers we thought would have innings. Outfielders fell apart. So we had Soto, and then we had Soto, which we took 17, and we took our next outfielder, Ramon Laureano, at 227.
I was about to say, what is that, 190 or something like that?
200 picks in between outfielders for us. So, you know, if there is, and I've talked about this meme before with the three dragons, you know, we've got our lineup, we got our rotation, And the dragon with the googly eyes is our outfield. It's Juan Soto, Ramon Laureano, Trent Grisham, David Peralta, and Trey Mancini. We got another mid-tier first baseman, and we got him to play outfield. He's hitting the ball harder this spring. So, and then Max Kepler, who's on, I probably have him on like half of my teams.
Okay. Heavy investment. So. How did you feel coming out of it, though, that last thing?
I feel great. I feel really great. I feel we've got power. We've got speed. Fantasy Pros gave us a B and said batting average is a risk. But with Rowdy and Grisham and Naylor and Kepler, we have four of the biggest beneficiaries from the shift rules. So we're hoping that if those guys can get their batting average up at all, then we'll be all right. And then in terms of a staff, Burns, Gilbert, Montgomery, Turnbull, Tyon, like I think this is a good staff. And then we wanted to have a lot of major league pitchers on our bench, and Ryan Nelson, Hunter Harvey, and Kenta Maeda on our bench in the first week. That's pretty good, I think.
Yeah, so. Ryan Nelson taking the gig, Trey Jameson moving to the bench.
That's news too, right? That's news too today. Ryan Nelson got the gig.
That was another one. You know, and lastly too, our boy Estuary Ruiz made the roster official, and he'll be out there. Someone I was trying to target in an AL only league and got sniped on it for the stolen bases. So would have liked to have seen you got him with all the criticalness of like, I don't know.
That would have been funny.
If you had him on
there. I don't, you know, I try not to, I'm not playing games with people. I know there's a fine line, you know, with the main event and trying to keep your cards close to your vest. Yeah. I try to, you know, the Volpe thing was maybe a little misdirection, but I don't
think
so.
You were transparent.
I just expressed my doubts. And while I have some hopes for him to be really good, you know, it still just didn't make any sense where he was going. So,
well, also a guy that wasn't on the 40 man, they had Oswald Peraza who was on the 40 man. No, I think you were very transparent across the board. I'm just saying it would have been fun for a guy that you're critical of, Estrella Ruiz, for him to have made the team for the stolen base.
There's a prize for everyone. There's a prize for everyone where it makes sense. You know, no matter what, you know, I said Vinny Pascantino was on a draft list, but if he'd fallen to, you know, 150 or, you know, 170 where we think he should have been, then we would have taken him. So there's always a prize for everyone.
That's right. That is going to do it for the episode, my friends. Thank you guys for hanging out. You can find me on Twitter at @isitthewelsh. You can find Eno at @enosaris. And of course, you can find us right here at Rates and Barrels. You guys can rate and review and subscribe to the podcast, do all that stuff. We'll be talking prospects tomorrow for Project Prospect, and then DVR back on Wednesday. Make sure you're on the YouTube channel, on the app, and on your podcast app for all of the stuff and things. Thank you guys for hanging out with us today. Season is only a couple days away, so get your last minute draft prep in. And if you need more draft prep, athletic.com/ratesandbarrels. The draft kit is still out there to help you, and a whole bunch more. Go read that bold predictions article. Maybe implement that into your draft prep.
$1 a month right now.
$1
a month right now.
That's sick. $1 a month. athletic.com/ratesandbarrels. I actually did that quite a while ago before I was lucky enough, everybody, to get a free subscription now that I'm doing hosting. But I did. look at me. That was for being part of The Athletic.
Extra $1 a month in your pocket.
I got my dollar to do literally. You remember when you could like be like, hey, $1 a month could do. What can you get for $1 right now?
Yeah,
you can't get anything. I can do anything with $1. But if I save it up, I could get a cup of coffee in a week. But I had that deal going on leading up into this. So you guys should do the same thing. Dollar a month, ridiculous deal. Go check it out. theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels. That'll do it. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here on The Athletic. I'm Welsh. That's Eno. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.